Welcome to the Weekly Workplace, where professionals come to find insights and inspiration for success. Hosted by the Missouri Training Institute, Dewey Thompson, Ray Lyon, and Brianna Larimer share their decades of experience training in workplaces across the nation and talk to other experts about what it takes to be a team player, a great manager, and a leader others want to follow. This is the Weekly Workplace.
All right, welcome to the Weekly Workplace. My name is Brianna Larimer. With me, I have Ray Lyon, Dewey Thompson. We are the fabulous MTI, Missouri Training Institute team. Today's topic is on self-confidence. And you know, Ray, when you brought this topic idea, I thought, what better person to talk about this than you? And I say that because when I first started MTI, and those who have done any training with you, know that you have a presence about you, a very confident woman, and probably one of the more confident women I've ever seen in my life. And I'm in awe with that sometimes. And I'm just curious, like, what is it? Where does that come from?
Yeah. I know I have a lot of self-confidence, and my friend once told me, like, you don't know how little you are. Like, you act like you're 10 feet tall. And, you know, when I think about self-confidence, you know, I don't think I'm always going to win. To me, that's not what self-confidence is. I'm not focused on the outcome, but I always feel like I can give it my best. Like, I can get up there and I'm going to give it a fighting chance. You know, I'm not the fastest runner, but I'm going to give it everything I got when I get to the race. And I think that's just, I had a good role model. My mom was a strong, confident woman. Actually, she probably would have won everything, right? But that was just her, and she was extremely talented. But to me, that's what confidence is. It isn't being focused on the outcome, but it's being focused on the act.
I think that's a good distinction between the two, because, you know, a lot of times, and you and I have talked, and Dewey, you and I have talked as well about, I feel like this is an area I could use improvement in. And for me, it is always the outcome. I have to be able to win. I have to be able to be good at it. Because if I'm not, if I fail, then, I mean, that self-talk and the stuff that I have going on mentally, man, it just eats away at you. And so I like that distinction that really it's the act and not necessarily the outcome. You know, Dewey, I will say it's intriguing to me because we've started talking about this too. You know, you mentioned that you and I are kind of in the same boat. This is an area you'd like to maybe improve on as well, but you don't present that either in training. So where does that come from for you?
Well, if I really want to get vulnerable with everyone around here, people, when they meet me for the first time face to face, they will notice that I have a fat lip. A lot of people think that I get into a lot of bar fights or that I fall down a lot, or a lot of people think I chew tobacco and those kinds of things, but it's actually just a birthmark. And, you know, growing up, kids can be awfully cruel. And so growing up in a small town and you get to know these folks and, you know, I've heard all the name calling and that kind of stuff. But I do develop confidence. It's not to say that I'm not a confident person, but I had to wrestle with that throughout my upbringing. And, you know, it takes you for years sometimes just to say to yourself, you know what, this is who I am. And you can either take it or leave it. The things that I do really well, and I think I'm a pretty good trainer, for example, I enjoy that job. And so that's what people kind of see outwardly, is that confidence doing that. If they just only knew internally how I was feeling at any given moment. But I try to, you know, fake it till it's real, so to speak, you know, that helps me to do what Ray was talking about earlier in terms of, you know, just trying, you know, that I'm going to give it my best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I might fail once in a while, but I'm going to give it my best. Mm-hmm. And so it's taken me a lot of years of changing my self-talk and that kind of thing and putting that whole issue aside. And, you know, that's other people's problems. Mm-hmm. That's not really mine, you mm-hmm. know. So that's kind of where it comes from.
I also think Dewey in, you know, so you might get the same delivery of confidence that I get. But I think also you're an actor.
Mm, yes, I am.
You know, I mean, theater was part of your life. And so taking on a character, mm-hmm. not saying that you're not genuine, because I've known you for decades and you're a very genuine person. But I also think that was part of, like you said, fake it till you make it. I think that was also part of your ability to have that presence mm-hmm. in front of an audience when you're delivering content.
I often say that, you know, those 2 or 3 years where I was a theater major, because I was, again, remind everybody I was in the 8-year plan, yeah. changed that major often. But those 2 or 3 years that I was a theater major, I often feel that that was some of the best prepared and best training I had for my current job in getting up and training people mm-hmm. in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think it's interesting because when I do think about this self-confidence or even self-esteem, I do believe that it probably does go back to kind of a very poignant experience mm-hmm. that we may have had. You know, for Dewey, you just shared yours. And I can think back for me, I was always overweight as a child. And I think that, again, you're right. Kids can be cruel. And so for a lot of time, I just thought I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I'm going to do all the things that people tell me I can't do because I'm overweight. But it was also for other people. And I think self-confidence in a way is internal. It's for you. You're doing it for you. And that was not a very clear distinction for me in my younger days. But I guess talk a little bit about that, right? Do you see a difference between self-confidence and self-esteem? How do they work together?
Yeah, I do. I think one can feed the other. Mm. So I think in order to have self-confidence, you have to have positive self-esteem. I think if you don't have positive self-esteem, that's what links back to that event. So you can have low self-esteem, but you can still project the confidence. Mm-hmm. I think I have a pretty healthy self-esteem. At least that's what my EQI 2.0 says that I have. And they actually call it self-regard, mm-hmm. that I have high self-regard. And I remember as a youngster, and I'll go back because it does talk about coming from like that poignant event, something that was very episodic. And my mother was a professional athlete. She was a professional golfer, but she did many things athletically that were, you know, very good. And I remember playing, you know, games with her, you know, athletic games, ping pong, you know, volleyball, anything. And people ask, you know, well, you know, are you going to let her win? You know, meaning me. And my mother was like, no, I'm not going to let her win. You know, as so many parents do, you know, oh, help her win. Oh, she's so little. She's a little girl. Let her win. My mother was like, no, either she'll get better or she'll lose. And that was the philosophy, you know, and so it was always about the act, right? Get better. And so that's how I continued to strive. I was never going to beat her. She was a professional athlete, but it was always about the act. Right, of getting better.
I think that's very insightful, Ray. I heard a study sometime where that's what happens. People who are really high performers, it's not that they're trying to win, it's that they are giving it their shot, right? They remain open to that.
I'm curious, how do you... If you weren't, you know, weren't raised like under your mom, you know, and the idea of get better or lose, how do you do it now as an adult? How do you really try and build up your self-confidence if it is lower? What are some strategies for that?
It does start with you. And thinking about your own thinking. I mean, it's that metacognition, and you really have to be very intentional to hear your own voice. And you have to be very willing to stop listening to it and stop believing it. Because when I look at the quality of work that both of you produce, and you especially, Brianna, on your worst day, it's better than so many people's best day ever. You could not put out a bad product, even if you wanted to, with your eyes closed and your right hand tied to the back of your left foot. I mean, it would be better, right? I mean, that's just the type of standard you have. So you have to stop listening to that voice that says, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. So you really have to change your own self-talk, and you have to find out what that voice can be. And so for people that struggle with low self-esteem, always thinking that your value comes from an external source.
Validation.
Yeah. And you really have to start affirming yourself. You know, everyone deserves happiness. You know, and it's okay to want to be happy. It's okay to want to be happy. And, you know, also thinking about, you know, when you trace it back to what is that event, or what is that, you know, episode, that poignant moment that flipped the trigger that made us maybe think, I'm not good enough.
Oh, and those can happen in a moment too, can't
right.
they?
Oh my gosh.
You know, I am the proud father of a MU graduate, right? She just graduated. But anybody who has raised teenagers, that when they start the eye roll, you know, they might as well just come out and call you an idiot to your face, because, you know, that body gesture kind of means that. I also remember, and again, I love my father so much, who passed away this last year. But I remember growing up, and, you know, when I was kind of the rebel of the family. And so once in a while, I got into quite a bit of trouble. And I remember things, my dad coming to me and saying things like, Dewey, what were you thinking? Well, obviously, I wasn't thinking the right way, you know, so boom, you know, that can kind of, those little moments, and especially if they occur over and over and over again, can really kind of build and tear down that esteem, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I think of a kind of a laundry list of other strategies for changing self-esteem, none of which apply to Brianna, you know, because I think her worst enemy is herself.
Accurate. Very accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. And that wouldn't surprise her. I mean, because we've talked about that before, you know, but other strategies to mention would be things like poor visualization, you know, and thinking about what does success look like? And then what do you look like succeeding? You know, what does it look like you sitting behind that big cherry desk with CEO under your name on the door? You know, what does that feel like for you? And really seeing yourself in that role, right? How would you be if you were the leader of this team? What kind of leader do you want to be? And really having that visualization and repeating it over and over and over. And, you know, I think Olympic athletes, when they visualize going down that court or that course, or, you know, the uneven bars or the balance beam, and they visualize, you know, the success of, you know, nailing that landing. Trust me, none of them focus on breaking an ankle.
Right.
Right. They all focus on sticking it over and over and over and over and over. And we as normal people, you know, can visualize what that successful outcome looks like and us creating it. And then we just execute it.
You know, I think that that's interesting that you say that, because one of the things I did try as part of this self-confidence boosting journey is, and you all are aware, I used to wrestle in high school, train mixed martial arts for a few years after that, and finally decided at 28, it was time to get in the cage. I wanted to do that. And that was the first time I did something for me. Like I've spoken about that before, but just taking the time to realize I really want this. And I did exactly what you said. I visualized it over and over and over again. I sat in calm and quiet. I was out in nature and I just visualized knocking the other person out, you know, I think research suggests that it truly does help you when you are in that battle, then when you are faced up to that obstacle.
And yes, what did you do?
I knocked her out.
Yes. So research doesn't suggest anything. Research proves.
Yeah, and it does. You know, that was a boost of confidence, right? It was telling myself, okay, you could do it. But you have to keep that momentum. And that was probably something that I was not so good at. So I think that this isn't a one and done, especially for a lot of people. If you're in the realm of real low self-esteem, low self-confidence, it's got to be a continuous grace that you're giving yourself, a continuous and intentional kind of push forward towards boosting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, another strategy on the list is set goals for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you've had a mentor, and I know, Dewey, you've had a mentor, you know, 100 things on your bucket list. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we struggle with 10.
Right.
You know, well, I want 100. You know, if you get 10, good, but I want 100 things because those goals, you know, you visualize getting in the cage and knocking her out. And lo and behold, what did you do? I got in the cage and knocked her out. Well, my goodness, what's next, right? So setting goals is also good for changing that self-esteem.
I think it's important to acknowledge the victim mentality, the reactivity, you know, being kind of an indicator of maybe that low confidence or low self-esteem, but recognizing when that's happening.
Yes.
You know, and I think in any of these scenarios, if we push ourselves, we have a goal, we push ourselves and then it doesn't work out the way we plan and we start trying to push it off on someone else, it's probably time to say, oh, hold on. That's actually not on them. That's on me.
Right.
And reworking.
But see, I think when people get in habits of playing the victim, mm-hmm. They don't want to do the hard work looking at themselves.
True.
That idea of self-awareness and what role did they actually play in that outcome. It becomes easier just to blame it on other things or other people of why things are not happening for them, right? So it's hard to kind of move that around to get out of that victimization.
And I think it's because they haven't learned how to forgive either. Mm. You know, so they're hard on other people. They don't forgive other people, but at the core, they don't know how to forgive themselves. Mm. You know, so if I can't forgive myself, I don't want to blame myself. And I think taking charge is also another self-esteem step, you know, saying, you know what, enough's enough. Mm. Knock it off, Ray. You know, get up, put on your pointy boots and get to hustling. You know, and that is exactly, I mean, if you talk about, you want to hear my mother in your head, I mean, that's her, you know, she's been gone many, many years now, you know, over 2 decades, but I can hear that, you know.
You know, that brought a question to my mind, Ray, is because I know that you're also a very independent woman, right? And so how does that play out? How does your self-confidence maybe lead you to your sense of independence? Or does it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes to my detriment, because I feel like, oh, I don't need anybody, you know? And so for a good part of my life, I don't. You know, I think it helps me do what I need to do. And I know I've spoken about that before. But then I also don't need anybody, you know, and so I don't seek out sometimes, you know, it's easy to go home after work and just kind of snuggle in, turn on the tube or, you know, get a book or and just kind of, you know, isolate myself. And then you look up, it's dark. It's, oh, it's time for bed. And I haven't spoken to a soul all day, you know? And I mean, that's not good human, you know, you've got to get out and you've got to make and keep connections. But I am very independent. And I sometimes have to realize, wait a minute, I work on a team. You know, I need to ask other people their opinions. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't know everything, right? I need to build connections.
Because I think you're kind of touching on what my next question was going to be related to this, but where's that line of self-confidence and arrogance?
Yes.
You know, like, because there are some folks I've encountered in my life. You are not one of them, but there are some folks I have encountered where the confidence is just oozing out of them to the point of they aren't listening to anybody else's
right.
ideas. They don't think that anyone else could even contribute something.
I think
you just answered your own question.
Yeah, exactly. I think the line gets drawn when you no longer are curious, right? When you've become so confident in your own knowledge that you are no longer curious, that your ego has taken over, right? I'm no longer asking anybody else's opinion. I'm no longer saying, well, what's your perspective on that, Dewey? Or, wow, I know a little something about that. What do you think? Right? I might think I do know everything about that. And especially at this age, I'm like, oh, I don't want to know anymore. I don't want another device. I don't want to have to learn TikTok. I don't want to, right? But I need to. That's how I keep up. That's how I stay relevant. And when we no longer are curious and new information is coming in and I see people get defensive, that's when I know their ego is taking over.
Hmm. So tell me, thinking about your history, and you shared it on previous podcasts a little bit, but it certainly seems like self-confidence can have a lot of benefits, especially in the workplace.
Yes.
Specifically. Tell me about some of those benefits you've either personally experienced or things that you know building your self-confidence would bring.
For me, I was never afraid to volunteer for anything. So I think early on in my career, I was seen as a go-getter. And I'm sure Dewey, you know, he was there early in my career because we worked at the same place. And I went from teller to supervisor, senior teller, assistant branch manager, manager,
vice president.
I mean, I just, you know, by 32, you know, from 22 to 32, 10 years, I went all the way to there.
And from my perspective at that time, you were driven. You were probably one of the most driven women I knew at that time.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing it and not just in
and
my
with two kids.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And I had two babies in all of that. And I was on every committee. I was on boards, you know, throughout the town. So I did everything in those 10 years. So that to me is how confidence can move you from point A to point B, you know, at speed of light kind of thing. It also hurt me in some ways because it took me away from my family a lot. I had a high sense of achievement. I was feeding that beast, so to speak. But it took me away from other things that were very important to me. But I also, in that time, saw where people that had a lack of self-confidence, it was hurting them in their career because they were the people that weren't advocating for themselves. They weren't asking to be listened to. They weren't, you know, going for those promotions, you know, and they were so talented. And I just wanted to shed some of my confidence. You know, I just wanted to like shake the tree and just like pick those up, you know, and give them some of that.
They never challenged themselves.
No.
You know, it sounds like. And that is something that you were constantly doing is challenging yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, though. You know, a lot of this we're talking about is internal, right? It's things that you have to personally do, but how can we help each other and develop each other's self-confidence? Because I think that here at MTI, I've been fortunate because you all have poured into me more than I've probably ever been poured into. And I can see a difference just by having someone else see things in me that I didn't see in myself. So how do we do that for others?
It's amazing what a kind word will do.
Yes.
When you see somebody committed and you see somebody doing fantastic things, it's important to recognize those things. A kind word can really boost somebody pretty quickly and pretty easily. And it doesn't cost a thing.
No. And Dewey's the kind word person. So you can go to him for that kind word, raise more of the real word. I'm very straightforward. And when I see talent, I point it out. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, get moving because it's there, baby. I mean, don't squander it. I like to be the light to others. And that's my mission statement, you know, be a light to others.
Nice.
Well, we certainly appreciate it. And I'll tell you again, if it's not something that comes natural to you, you know, you still have work to do. You can't pass it on to someone else. However, find your Ray and find your Ray, you know, that can help kind of bring you alongside as well. So any final tips?
I would just say, yeah, stay with it. You know, listen to yourself talk. And if it's negative, stop. Just absolutely stop, because you control you. And that means you control the thoughts in your head. And write down a new thought and just restate it, right? You know, write that new thought and cancel the old one and start the new one.
Absolutely. Well, we thank you. Thank you all for tuning in. Go out and shine your self-confidence everywhere. And so until our next episode,
go be great.
Thanks for listening to The Weekly Workplace, hosted by the Missouri Training Institute. Dewey, Ray, and Brianna stand ready to connect with you and meet your training needs. Be sure to check out ways to contact them in the episode description or at mti.missouri.edu.